Hello, everyone, and thanks for listening and watching the Italian-American Entertainment Podcast. And I'm your host, Vince Shirelli. And today I'll be talking to Mr. Mike Marino. And Mike is affectionately known to millions of his fans worldwide as New Jersey's Bad Boy. He has performed in every major comedy club, theater, casino, and event center from New York to Los Angeles and around the world. So welcome, Mike. How are you?
Well, hey, man, how you doing? Thank you for that great introduction.
Well, thanks for being here. And we'll get into some of your history here in a little bit and the stuff you do. But I always start this podcast off with, since it's about Italian-Americans, where are you from now, where you live, and where do you trace your Italian ancestry?
Great question, and I'm glad you asked that because I know all the details of my family, especially my mom's side, because right now I'm in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. This is the house I actually grew up in, but I was born in Jersey City, New Jersey, in what they call the Marion section. And the Marion section was all Italians from Italy. And that's where my mother and father met, and all their aunts and uncles and cousins, and everybody stayed for years and years and years. So many Italian immigrants, because Jersey City actually is where the Statue of Liberty is. And that's Ellis Island and Liberty Island, which is in New Jersey. A lot of people think it's in New York. It's not. It's actually New Jersey, right? So that's where they went. And since Jersey City was so close, a lot of them just stayed there, along with immigrants from so many different parts of the world as well, getting little sections of Jersey City because it was so close to, let's say, the Statue of Liberty before they started going far out into the United States. Since I'm home because of the pandemic, I've been reading all of this stuff that my mom had, pictures, letters, airmail from Italy. So I know everything by reading. And I also knew when my mother was alive too. And my dad tells me things too, but to read it was so much fun and great. And it also explains why me and my two brothers and my mother have blonde hair and blue eyes, and we don't stereotypically look that dark Italian way, like, let's say, a Sicilian.
Right.
So we're from Campobasso, and it was a small town called Doronia, and Doronia was mountains, and they grew up working cattle, dairy, and a lot of donkeys.
Oh, cool.
So pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's people always tell me I don't look at Italian either, but I'm 100% Sicilian. But when my beard, if I grow out a beard, it grows in red. So,
Really?
Yeah, somewhere along the line. But I just had my DNA test. Actually, I've been doing the ancestry thing, and I have 0% anything European. It's all Sicilian and like Middle Eastern, which makes sense for the Sicilian. But so I don't know where this red hair comes from, but my dad's the same way. Eyebrows and like beard growing red. So something strange in there, mixed in the blood.
My two brothers and I, when we were really, really young, we looked very, very German or Irish. My father has blonde hair and blue eyes too. Wow. But there are darker family members on my mom's side. And of course, they were very short, old school Italian.
Yep.
And their first language, of course, was Italian.
Right, right. So do you speak any Italian?
No. There was a thing when my mom was alive. She said to her sons, you're never going to speak Italian, that you're American. That's it.
That's how my family was. My dad's side, they did not. My grandfather wanted only English, no Italian. So
is
my
that
mom.
Right?
My mom was born in Sicily, so she came over when she was 9 years old. So she, that side of my family still speaks Italian. But my dad's side, yeah, same story. It's weird. You're not the first person to tell me that. It's the same story. They just want it. We're American now. We're speaking English. So,
yeah, it was a stigma. I guess they wanted to make sure that they were Americanized.
Right.
And weren't about to go around yelling about anything other than, hey, my kids are American.
Right, exactly. So
I actually have my great-grandmother's passport.
Oh, cool.
See, it's funny to see. It looks like a driver's license.
That's cool. Did
it came over in the 60s and she was in her 80s.
Oh, wow. Wow. Interesting. So they came over later than in the 60s. So you, because a lot of the families, my families came over in the 50s and 60s too. But you talk to a lot of these Italian Americans, I mean, they're second, third, fourth generation. They came over in 1880s and 1910s and all that. But another interesting thing I always like to ask, do you know if your name, the Marino name is, of course, Italian, but on your mom's side, maybe, did any of the names get butchered or changed on your side of the family that you know of?
No, my mother's last name was Berardo.
Okay.
And most of her family at that time went to Toronto, Canada.
Okay.
And Argentina. So wow. They are Berardo. And it's cool to see them all, because when I became a comedian and I started touring the country, I met them.
Oh, cool.
You know, now we talk all the time.
Sure.
And the cousins of cousins of cousins like to talk to me because I'm in the entertainment business.
Sure.
Before we even talk about our heritage.
Sure.
And how we're related.
So you have a pretty deep, background in the entertainment industry. You've done a lot of things. So it's kind of hard to find one spot to start with you. But from reading up on you a little bit, it seems like... I think I'm right from reading your bio. You actually were more into the acting side than the comedy. Is that correct?
Yeah, I never even wanted to be a stand-up comedian.
Okay.
In the beginning, when I wanted to perform, I wanted so badly to be a performer, I never really thought about comedy at all. So let's say when I was a child, I did my grammar school plays. I would always walk around the house impersonating TV commercials, mimicking people, pulling jokes on people. And then when I was in my teens and I went to junior high, I was doing all the plays at school, and I was also a drummer. And then when I went to high school, the music teacher called my parents and said, you know, your son really, really, really wants to be an actor. So they brought me to Herbert Berghoff Studios acting classes in New York City. And that's what really got me into it. So I started doing TV commercials, was the first thing around the age of 16, 17. Then I just kept on going. So when I graduated high school, I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York, still never thinking I was going to have a flair for comedy. I wanted to do theater, off Broadway. I wanted to do movies. But I always liked clowning around. So sometimes I would be in the Jersey Shore with my friends and I cracked some jokes. Then I started to impersonate Rodney Dangerfield. And I listened to his jokes and I listened to his albums and I thought, well, this is goofy. This is funny. But it wasn't until I was 29 years old that I went to a comedy show and I was watching the comedians and I said to myself, I could do what they're doing. And I did it. And then I was addicted. So in the last 25 years, my primary income is stand-up comedy.
Wow. Well, that's great. That's congrats to you, because there's a lot of people out there. I'm not a comedian, but I'm a musician. And, you know, having friends and people that try, it's a hard, anything in the entertainment business is hard. But stand-up comedy, a lot of respect for you guys. So,
well, stand-up comedy is a great high when you're performing. The endorphins that you get, I forgot what it's really called, because you're just so happy, you're so high, so that when you're not performing, it could actually become very depressing.
Right.
Now, I don't do drugs and I really don't drink, and I based my stand-up act on my real family and observations of life. So I'm pretty lucky that I can keep on going even during the pandemic. But performing also got me movie roles. So instead of going to auditions for TV shows or movies, they saw me somewhere performing and said, this guy is great, let's give him a role.
That's cool.
So I got lucky that way.
That's cool. So was there, when you were growing up, especially since this is an Italian-American show, was there a specific Italian-American comedian or actor that really influenced you?
Well, who doesn't like... Well, maybe back in the day, Robert De Niro. I mean, I love Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro's got great, great work, you know, and who doesn't love Al Pacino and The Godfather? I personally just don't like when entertainers get political. I
mean, right, yeah.
It's not your job. Just do what you do as an actor. I don't talk about politics. I'm a comedian. I don't care about it. I mean, I care about it, but that's not my job.
Right.
So, of course, I wanted to be Robert De Niro. I wanted to be Taxi Driver. I wanted to be Al Pacino. I wanted to be on The Sopranos. I want to grow up and be like those guys. But I didn't really look that way. And I did do a lot of mob movies, but I was always a cop and I always got killed. So I figured stand-up would be a good way. And then I actually got a part in a movie called Pizza with Bullets, which starred Talia Shire, you know, from Godfather right. and Rocky. And Vinnie Pastore, who was on The Sopranos at the time, he played Big Pussy.
Wow.
So I got in that movie and I was all psyched up. And then I got on the set and they said, no, you're not a mobster. You're going to play the priest. But the priest was part of the mob family and it was a comedy. So well, I fit cool. right in and I had fun.
Well, that's cool. So did you know, though, at a young age, were you brought up with people saying you're the funny guy or... You know, that did you know, did people tell you you were funny at a young age?
Yeah, everybody was always telling me that I was funny. But when I was in my 20s, I was actually upset that they said that I was funny because I wanted to be a serious actor.
Right, right.
I remember one time in Italy, it was the first time I went to Italy. I was doing a commercial for the Navy and they had a campaign called Join the Navy, See the World. And they took six actors from New York, put us on a plane, and they took us to Rome. And we filmed in Rome, but we also filmed where they had the American Navy ships in Sperlonga and Gaeta, which were beach resort areas. And it was beautiful. They had a church built into a cliff. The water was crystal blue. The girls were gorgeous and nobody spoke English. So when I tried to speak the Italian dialect that my mother spoke, right. most people were saying they didn't understand me.
Right.
Especially in Rome. And they would say to me, you're better off speaking English.
Yeah.
But that was the first time I got to go to Italy. And I was really the all-American white bread guy who joined the Navy in the commercial, and nobody even realized this is where my family's from. Pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah, so, that's cool.
But what I was doing is when we were off the set, for some reason or other, that weekend, I was impersonating Rodney Dangerfield to everybody. And I was 23. So that kind of made me think, you know, maybe I could be in comedies, but not stand-up.
That's so after all these years with the stand-up that you've been doing, how many years is it now that you've been doing stand-up?
27
years. So when I first saw you, it's got to be 5-10 years ago, I started seeing some of your stuff on YouTube. And
was that right?
Yeah, and I followed you over the years, and it seemed to me, you know, there was Pat Cooper, and there was somebody... Yeah. There were some of these Italian guys that was doing the Italian comedy, but to me, it seems like for a while there was kind of a lull. And then I saw your stuff, which you seem to be a little earlier than like the Sebastian Maniscalcos and these guys that are coming out now that are really kind of catapulting this Italian American comedy. A lot of guys from Canada I'm seeing now on Instagram and Facebook doing this comedy. So you were... Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe I'm right. Were you one of these first guys that was really trying to play off the Italian-American thing before it was... like I said, it had been happening earlier in the 60s with Pat Cooper and those guys. But so if this was, you know, the 80s, 90s, and you were playing off this Italian-American thing, to me it seems like it was very early on before it started catching on
well,
like it is now.
That's a really good question because the answer is kind of yes. And maybe not,
okay.
Because before me, yeah, there was Pat Cooper, but there was also Richard Jenny. Richard Jenny did 12 HBO specials, and he talked about his Italian family from Brooklyn.
Okay.
There was also So the legendary comedian Dom Irrera, who talked about his Italian roots. There's a lot of Italian comedians before that too in Canada, especially Montreal. I think what I was doing, I was one of the, I want to say, the first comedian saying an Italian president running the country. And right. I think that's what made people think he's the Italian comedian.
Right.
Which is, if I was to do an hour performance, it's only about maybe 10, 15 minutes of the actual program. But it stuck. And then I went on tour with Andrew Dice Clay, and they thought, oh, look at these Italian guys. But I actually am Italian. Right. Dice is actually Jewish. His last name is Silverstein.
Right.
So he never really talked about being Italian. He never did. He just does his thing.
Right.
We used to do a show called The Night of a Thousand Guidos at the Comedy Store. And Joe Rogan was on it. Sebastian Maniscalco was on it. Wheels Parisi, Andrew Dice Clay, Luca Palanca. A lot of great Italian comedians from different parts of the country. And they had that too. For some reason or other, though, I actually think I was hitting most of the home runs because I said, what if I ran the country? And I've changed all those routines through the course of the years. I mean, I had an album called Jersey Born and Raised. My original album was called Vinny Get the Bat. And then I did Live from the Paramount. I did Live from the Borgata. And things would change, of course. And I would do the thing about The Last Supper was created by the Italians because they said, I'm not doing it no more. This is it. I've had it. I ain't cooking. Nobody appreciates me. Paint the picture. This is The Last Supper. But I used to do stand-up comedy with Sebastian Maniscalco many, many years ago. Him, Brett Ernst, a couple of phenomenal comedians that are still earning good money today, like all the guys I mentioned. Sebastian, in the beginning, I don't remember him doing about Italian stuff. He was observational, but then he started that, and he took off. You know, everybody takes off, and then everybody lands. Some people never take off. Some people never land.
Right.
It's a tough, tough business. Right now, one of the big names also is Vic DiBattista. He's from area, and he was doing stand-up for, I want to say, 25 years, and then he came out with a video on YouTube about bread and milk, and he shot through the roof.
Right.
But he deserves it. I mean, he's been around a long time. He's working his ass off. I do remember opening for Pat Cooper back in the day.
Really?
Yeah, and he whispered in my ear when I was done. I said, ladies and gentlemen, Pat Cooper. And he whispered in my ear, I'll never work with you again. Isn't he great?
Oh, jeez.
He's a legend. And so there's a lot of guys doing great stand-up comedy. I'm sure I might be forgetting people's names.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And I don't mean that in a bad way because I like to be friends with everybody. I miss the comedy world right now.
Right, yeah.
But
So why do you think, at least in the past couple years, that this Italian-American comedy has really skyrocketed, at least in my eyes? And a lot of it has to do with, I think, Instagram and Facebook. A lot of these guys I see in the New York area, but also Toronto, Montreal, doing these little skits, dressing up like their grandma or their Italian mom and doing this stuff. And it seems like it never was around, and then all of a sudden, it's just like exploded. And to me, I think a lot of it has to do with, unfortunately, my grandparents, the old timers are dying off, and the ones left, you know, I'm 30, but even my parents in their 50s, you miss hearing that accent, or you miss the, you know, experiencing it. So to me, that's probably why it's happening. It's a lot. It's the nostalgia thing of, I miss my grandparents or great grandparents, unless you see something different. But I think that's probably what's going on.
Family is always going to be, I believe, the funniest stuff you're ever going to watch.
Yeah.
We all have somebody in our family that says the craziest, silliest stuff. And when I first started doing stand-up, that was my Uncle Tommy. Now, I don't know if you've seen my characters, Uncle Tommy, the stone guy, Mooney, who's always on the beach, the girl that I do, Michelle. These are characters that I did when I was 29. I just got rid of them and just wanted to be just me. But for the last 5 years, I brought them back because on the internet, you can introduce them. Right. So my Uncle Tommy was the old guy who would say the dumbest, craziest, funniest stuff. And if you went and told your friends, listen to what my Uncle Tommy said, they're like, oh my God, my Uncle Joey said that.
Right.
What's
right.
with these guys? I don't know. I think they're crazy. So I remember one time my Uncle Tommy said to me, he goes, did you watch the news today, young man? And I says, no, why? What happened? He goes, the president finally listened to what I told him. I go, what? You talked to the president? He goes, yeah, we all talked to him. I told him, you know, make sure you do the right thing. And he did. He finally listened to me. I go, but you don't know him. He goes, I knew him when he was a singer in Jersey City. I go, the president was a singer. He was an actor. He goes, they're all actors.
Oh, my God.
And it doesn't make any sense. But if you repeat that
right.
to people, they go, oh, my God, I know somebody just like that.
Right, exactly.
And that's where the laughs come from.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So when I talk about my mother, family,
yeah,
it makes people laugh. Because everybody's got one, no matter what race you come from. We all got a family. That's going to do crazy.
And they can relate to it. And that's why I think, you know, the Italian stuff, even though someone might not be Italian, if they're Jewish, they might relate a lot to the Italians because it's the guilt and the same type of thing and all these different, you know. Well,
Jewish and Italian people have a lot in common.
Oh, yeah.
It's all about family and food.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And guilt.
Guilt.
Yeah.
What do you mean you leaving? Exactly. You're going to break my heart.
So you've performed all over the country, around the world, but at least in America, do you have at least one or two favorite venues or events that you've performed at that really stick out to you?
Yeah.
All these years.
There's a lot of theaters that are great. Last year, I did the Count Basie, which is in Red Bank, New Jersey. It's a famous, famous theater. Built in 1928, I believe. There's the Paramount Theater in Asbury Park, New Jersey, really famous. Again, built in the 1920s, 1,600 seats, big, beautiful. You know, they had acoustics from when opera singers used to sing in there without microphones and sound. They were vaudevillian theaters too, like the Marx Brothers played there, and Luke Costello. Abbott and Costello played there. Then, of course, Bruce Springsteen, Bon Jovi. So these are iconic places. And I was lucky enough to perform on that stage, the E Street Band. Then you got places like NJ Pack, which is in Newark, New Jersey. But I did a big theater in Chicago. We think we talked about that, the Arcata, which is just gorgeous.
It is.
And it had that speakeasy where you go have dinner. You feel like you're in the 1920s.
Yeah, Ron's done a great job over there.
Yeah, oh, what a great show. And I did that, I guess, about a year and a half ago in February when they had the vortex, the freeze vortex. It was so cold. And I did it on my birthday. And thank God, I mean, it was packed. And when I was done performing, Ron Onesti came out on stage with a huge cannoli filled with little cannolis, and he gave everybody in the room one, and they sang happy birthday. So that's memorable stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, Ron knows how to treat his entertainers and his audience. He's a great guy.
I have got to go back there.
Yeah, no, he's a great. I interviewed him on this podcast a few weeks ago. He's a great guy.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because he also had... let's say an Italian American street festival.
Yeah.
I performed at the festival.
Oh, we probably were at the same festival then. My band was at Taylor Street. What was it? Last year, 2 years ago?
It might be 2 years ago.
Yeah, that was when I was there. Now that you say that, you were there and my band was playing on a different stage. We didn't meet each other,
great,
but crazy.
Clean city. I performed on stage, of course, with a lot of entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite comedy acts, the Uncle Louie Variety Show.
Yeah. Funny guys. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
These guys are great. Great. Lou and Carlo.
Yeah.
Russo.
Yeah. They're great guys. They were my first interview on this show, actually. So.
Come on now.
Yeah, they're great guys.
I have to call him and tell him.
Yeah, no, and that was the same festival because my band was there too. So we were all there at the same time because I had met them in passing. So, Ron does a great job. It's unfortunate this year with everything going on that, you know, bands and you guys and all entertainers can't perform. But what are you going to do? You know, we look towards the future. But
yes, we will.
But after
we will overcome.
That's right. So because you are, you know, Italian-American and you're performing throughout the country, do you notice the laughs different? Or do you get a better reception from one region of the States against a different region for the Italian stuff? Do you see like a difference throughout the United States with a lot of these Italian Americans?
You know what? Funny is funny. And I've been fortunate enough to perform in every and any venue you can think of. When I started doing stand-up and I first moved to Los Angeles, I was performing in mostly black clubs. I wanted to see if I could do it. And in Hollywood at that time, it was so hard to get stage time. So you would go into the craziest places and try anything.
Right.
And I got accepted because I really wasn't there to offend anybody. I wasn't there to pick on anybody. I did my point of view, told my jokes, and I went home. And then I would always get invited back. So I used to do what they call Chocolate Sundays, Fat Tuesdays, and then they had the Latino comedy jams. So I found myself playing in front of a lot of Mexican audiences. And as far as everybody was concerned, I was just the Italian comedian doing what I do.
Right.
And it made everybody laugh because the truth is funny. If you make something up or you offend somebody, well, then you might get your ass kicked in the parking lot.
Right.
But it's not necessary. That's not your job.
Right.
And I was just there doing what I was doing. So then when I became a regular at the Comedy Store and the Laugh Factory, I would make the training really, really hard. You go up late at night. Everybody's already drunk. People want to heckle you. But I also learned the art of doing clean comedy, like performing on cruise ships in front of an audience that's international. Right. Sometimes people come to see a show, don't even speak English. But there's something about people who, let's say, are Italian from New Jersey, have that little swagger. I don't know what it is. It just makes people laugh. Right. And I would entertain in front of children. And I would wonder, what the heck are they laughing at? They feel it.
Right.
The feeling.
Yeah.
So
right.
I would try any audience. As far as I'm concerned, performing in front of anybody is like tasting anybody's food. Yeah, I'm Italian. I like macaroni and meatballs. But if you come at me with some Asian dish and I like it, I'm going to eat it.
Right.
So
right.
It's the same thing. I want to make everybody laugh. I want every age. I want every color. And I'm going to do my best to make people happy.
Cool. So after all these years, what do you love most about your career as a comedian so far?
Well, you give up a lot. You really do. I mean, I've never been married. I have no children. When I was in my 20s and early 30s, I thought, you know, I'm going to live the traditional life. I'm going to get married and I'm going to have kids and I'm going to live in New Jersey and I'm going to be the greatest father. It just never happened to me. And then when I had my Hollywood life, okay, it gets so nutty out there, you don't know which end is up.
Right.
So you give up a lot because I really do miss everybody. I wonder what would have happened if I did have kids. But then the trade-off, I've been all around the world. I have friends all around the world. I can make a phone call and show up in Barbados and say I'm coming in.
Right.
And I did that because I worked really hard. I entertained on all the cruise ships around the world. And I also did the USO Comedy Tour. And the USO Comedy Tour will take you into some areas most human beings who are not in the military will never get to see.
Right.
I actually got the Bob Hope Award. That's this right here.
Oh, cool.
This is the Oscar for stand-up comedians. And it's shaped like Bob Hope. Can you see it?
Yeah, that's very cool.
Because if you remember, Bob Hope was always known for entertaining the troops.
Right, yeah.
That's back in the day. So when we got to do it, or several different comedians, Japan, Germany, Beirut, Afghanistan, Kuwait. I have military awards. I have plaques. I have a flag that flew over Saddam's castle.
Wow.
and you get to go to see all of this. And luckily for us, we don't get shot at. And then you get on a plane after you do your show and you go home.
Right. Yeah.
So this is actually priceless. Priceless.
No, that's very cool. That's very cool. So what do you, since you're Italian-American, of course, and that's what this show is about, what do you think the future is for Italian-American, specifically for Italian-American entertainment?
Well, you know, there's always the stereotypical movies that all the Italians are in the mob.
Right.
And there are some people who say, well, you shouldn't do mob movies. That's easy to say to some people, but it's very difficult for actors to listen to, because what if that was all we had the opportunity to do?
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, if you look at it, you're not really glorifying the mob. You're doing a story.
Right.
And you're an actor. So you're doing the best job you can as an actor in that situation. Now, I do a web series called Make America Italian Again.
That was my next question for you.
It's supposed to be a comedy about me running for president. And we go to the dumbest, silliest places on our travels. Most people laugh. Some Italians say, we're not all buffoons. And I say, but who said that we were?
Right, right.
I never say anything like that.
Right.
It's just a joke. So if you can't have fun, I can omit a word, Italian. And I could say me, my family, the way I do things. And I omit everybody. But I say us Italians, right. My family. So you can't really get mad at me. Yeah. You should really just have some fun.
Right.
I did a charity once. I raised $150,000 for the victims of the earthquake in Abruzzo, was it?
Right, yep. Mm-hmm.
I'm Abruzzese. And we did it at Danny Aiello's place in Hoboken, New Jersey. And somebody said to me, you know, you do that joke about being an Italian president and that you would whack people and maybe we should have the mob run the country. I don't appreciate that. And I says, okay, do you appreciate the amount of money I just raised for a bunch of strangers that I'll never meet? Because I'll take the money back if you want. So eventually you feel like going, come on, man.
Right.
And now with all these people running around trying to take down a statue of Columbus, I fought for that to make that go away. And I fought in this town and they didn't get rid of the statue because we stood up. But if you look at my actual history on what I did other than perform, I'm one of the creators of the Feast of San Gennaro in Los Angeles. I was on the board of directors for 10 years.
Wow.
They never had the Feast of San Gennaro in Los Angeles. Look it up. I'm one of the guys.
Yeah, no, that's a big festival.
Jimmy Kimmel, Adam Carolla, and all the producers and directors that were of Italian descent from New York and New Jersey.
Yeah.
In the second year of the Feast of San Gennaro, me and my friend Greg Canizzaro created the Sons of Italy Hollywood Lodge. Never done.
Wow.
And there were 500 of us. And guess what everybody did? Acting. Actors, producers, directors. A lot of guys were in Goodfellas. A lot of guys were in mob movies. And there were people saying, you know, now that we have this group, some of these actors shouldn't do mob movies. I'm like, that means tell them, don't go to work. Don't eat. Yeah. And who cares? Who really cares? I mean,
yeah,
you have to work.
Right. Yeah. No, it's always a hard, you know, me on the music side, I play Italian American music and the traditional Italian stuff. And, you know, last year I tried something and I was like, I'm either going to get, you know, razzed for this or people are really going to like it. And I said, I'm sure you've seen the CD Mob Hits, where in the 90s they came out with the CD called Mob Hits and it was a clever name. And it was, you know, the music from the mob movies. And I'm like, I'm going to do a speakeasy called Mob Hits and people can dress up 1920s and my band will play the Mob Hits and it's mob themed. And I was worried that someone was going to say something, but we had 200 people in there and no one said. It was packed and people had a good time. And it was, everybody likes to feel that way, whether they like it or not. is my thing. It's just Hollywood. It's a form of, whether it's real or not, I don't know. It's a hard thing. And, you know, on the music industry too, you know, every single song that people know, Italian songs, at least was in a mob movie somewhere. That's how it's been, how it got huge. So it's always a hard conversation, but, you know, it's not like we're in it. we're not doing anything crazy.
Because of performing and hosting at the Feast of San Gennaro, I got to go on tour many times with Dean Martin's daughter, Dina.
Oh, sure. Yep.
Dina Martin and I are good friends. We've done a lot of shows together. Robert Davi, who does a Sinatra show as well.
He's got a great voice.
Movies. He's the best.
Yeah, he's great.
And we do the whole Rat Pack type thing. Then I got to work with Sal Valentinetti from America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
In fact, if you want to have any of these people on your show, I can call them up and ask.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of shows, or I actually did a roast for Joe Mantegna. And I met them through Dina Martin and all these Italian organizations. And the list just goes on and on and on. I was very lucky to meet all these people. Yeah. I even met Frankie Valli, Frankie Avalon.
Oh, that's great.
You know, I'm pretty lucky.
Yeah, no. So why don't you tell everybody basically about your podcast? What's next for you? I know it's tough right now with COVID, but do you have any upcoming shows? Do you have any virtual things going on? And then a little bit about your podcast too that you have.
Well, my shows are all listed on my website, which is mikemarino.net. And at mikemarino.net, you can purchase shirts that say Marino 2020 limited edition, because once I get elected, I won't sell the shirts no more. I can't sell them from the White House, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I have a lot of gear. I have track suits that say Make America Italian Again. I have masks that say Make America Italian Again, all kinds of great stuff. And my tour dates are still at mikemarino.net. My YouTube channel, which is YouTube/MikeMarinoLive. At Mike Marino Live on YouTube, you can watch my web series, which is Make America Italian Again, 2016, Marino 2016. I have a little thing we call Ask Marino, and I answer your questions. I'm on Cameo, which I do shout outs and stuff like that. My podcast is called Live from My Mother's Basement. You can watch it on my Facebook fan page, which is Mike Marino Live on Facebook, Mike Marino Live on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. But if you watch this stuff and you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you'll always get some great comedy. I guarantee I make you laugh. You can order my CDs, DVDs, any of this stuff. And if you subscribe, and I see that you subscribe because of your show, I'll give them a discount. I also sell coffee.
I saw that. What is it? What's it called again? Is it
Bada Bean?
Bada Bean. There we go. Yeah, that's
BadaBeanCoffee.com is one of my sponsors. And if you order through me or you use my promo code Marino, you get 15% off. And it's really good coffee. Comes in all kinds of flavors, like medium roast, dark roast, light roast, and K cups. But the guy wrote the greatest menu, you know. It's not a latte, it's a tall. and they spell it C-A-W-F-E-E, coffee.
Oh.
www.badabeancoffee.com. I'm also sponsored by Hero King's Italian Deli in Nutley, New Jersey. But everything is accessible at mikemarino.net. And you should come on my podcast.
Would love to. And which night of the week? It's Tuesdays, you said, right?
Every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, live from my mother's basement. My real mom's basement here.
I was going to say, it's really your mother's basement. That's great. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. It's great. All I'm trying to do with this show is, you know, I'm a musician. We can't play right now, just like you. It's really tough. So I figured this is the time to really show people what Italian Americans are doing. People know, but I think sometimes they don't know how many Italian Americans really do contribute to the entertainment industry of this country. And
Martin Scorsese.
There you go. I'm finding stuff out every day. You know, I've heard the name Frank Capra. I had no idea how big of a deal he was. Came from nothing Sicilian, and you know, was one of the biggest movie producers of all time. It was an Italian. Yeah. And so, I mean, there's a lot of cool stories, people like you that are out there doing great and keeping the Italian American tradition and culture alive. So I appreciate you coming on, and I'll share all your links and everything like that on this podcast. So
you got it, buddy. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you again. And everybody tune into the next episode, and I'll see you next time. Thanks.
Thank you.